Unlock the past and safeguard your memories with scanmyphotos.com. Here's our special promo code, GODIGITAL, to get a whopping up to 50% off your photo scanning order. Don't let your cherished moments fade away. Digitize them now with precision and care. Whether it's old slides, photos, or films, bring them into the digital age and relive those precious memories. This is an affiliate promotion, meaning we may earn a commission if you take advantage of this fantastic deal. Act fast, preserve your history, and save big with Go Digital at scanmyphotos.com. Hi, I'm Maureen Taylor, the photo detective. I really love family photographs, all of them. From the mystery images you find in shoeboxes and albums, to the pictures you snap with your digital devices. No mystery is too small. A simple question about an image can lead to new stories of your ancestors. This means you can count on me to help you identify the people in them, offer solutions for preserving and organizing them, and yes, even guide you in the various ways to gather and share picture stories with your relatives. My guest today is Nathan Dylan Goodwin. Nathan, thank you so much for being on The Photo Detective. For anyone that doesn't know Nathan, why don't you tell us a little something about yourself?
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yes, my name is Nathan Dylan Goodwin. I'm a British author. I write mainly genealogical crime mysteries. I've done some historical fiction, some local history books as well, and another series about investigative genetic genealogy. I used to be a primary school teacher and now I'm a full-time author. So that's me in a nutshell.
Yes, and you're building a writing shed in your backyard.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a wonderful little detail. I like watching the progress of it on Facebook.
Yeah, hopefully I'll finish it one day.
You will, indeed. So you started your career as a writer, writing nonfiction, some local history books for the area in which you grew up.
I started, the first book was published in 2005. Yeah, so I lived and grew up in Hastings in East Sussex on the south coast of England. And I was doing some family tree research actually in Hastings Library. And I thought the period about the war was a really interesting period for Hastings actually. It was bombed a lot and quite a lot went on for a town that wasn't particularly a military base or anything. And so I thought, I would like to write a book about it. So I did. That's where I started. I interviewed lots of locals, looked at the newspaper archives and lots of the town archives that were stored in these boxes that hadn't been opened for many years in the library. Yeah, and came up with a book, Hastings at War, published in 2005. And I had lots of feedback on the back of that book. Lots more people came forwards with their stories wanting to be told. And I managed to find more photos that hadn't been published before. So basically I did a second volume to do with Hastings in the Second World War. And I really loved that writing process. And I kind of wanted to go then into fiction, but I didn't make that leap straight away. As I said, I was working as a primary school teacher and doing various other things and wasn't really sure that I could make a living really. The first two books were purely for as a hobby really, not as a try to be a career.
Well, it's a scary leap.
Big leap.
Do I have what it takes to write fiction? Is anyone going to read it?
Exactly.
What will people think of my fiction? Mm-hmm. And in fact, you launched yourself on I think a very successful writing career with the Morton Ferrier genealogical crime mysteries. By the way, one of my guests this month, we talked about sort of historical fiction genres. I did not have this one on the list, but it should be, which is genealogical historical crime fiction. It is a whole nother subgenre of historical fiction. It is. I'm going to add it to my reading list. Explain how you came up with your character, your main character, because he appears in all of the Morton Ferrier books, right? That's the series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you decide and how do you develop that character? And does each book sort of give you a little bit more detail about him, or do you sort of just know who he is and you follow along like many crime mysteries?
Yeah. So each book can be read as a standalone, but if people have not read any of them, then I say to recommend to start at the beginning of the series, because although each book is a standalone case that Morton works on, he has to solve a crime in the past using genealogy. That's the gist of each one. And the time period shifts. So his part is always set in the modern day, but he's the crime or whatever has occurred in the past, that changes with each book. So it could be Second World War, it could be 1800s, 1950s, Suez Crisis time. And so, yeah, those storylines get wrapped up within the book, but Morton's own personal story runs through the whole series from the beginning. And it's not a major spoiler alert to say that he's adopted. And in the very first book, Hiding in the Past, he doesn't know anything about his biological family. And so that thread runs through the entire series of that journey, really. So I won't give anything away, but yeah, that underpins the series and also his home life. But where he started, actually, I was doing, whilst working as a teacher, I did a master's in creative writing, and it was back in 2007 to 2009. And it was kind of when Who Do You Think You Are was becoming popular and genealogy was becoming a bit more of a popular hobby, you know, a wider audience, I suppose. And I thought it'd be quite interesting to have a kind of subgenre of the detective genre with this character, Morton Farrier, having to solve a crime, but using genealogy rather than traditional detective methods. And so, yeah, came up with that, but I didn't really envisage when I was writing it for the course. I didn't think for a moment that it would actually lead to where it has led. I had no idea. And in fact, in the first draft of the book, I was intending to kill him off at the end for it to be, you know, really a standalone. Obviously, I'm very glad I didn't, because he makes it through, and he's the star of each book. And yeah, so that's where that came from. And my colleagues on the course, they were really supportive of it and really liked the fact that it was something slightly different. A bit of a spin on the detective genre. And obviously it's has been very popular with family historians and genealogists around the world. So I've been very, very lucky, really.
So is he aging through the series? I know some detective fiction that I read, the main character seems to always be the same age, no matter, they never get older. It's always the same thing. But the one I'm reading, which is your most recent, The Foundling, it's set, the contemporary period is 2019. So when you start the series, what's the contemporary period? So he's aged a few years.
Yes, he does. I mean, it's a kind of a double-edged sword, really, because I think Agatha Christie said she wished she'd made Poirot younger when she'd started, because, you know, she had this huge series and suddenly he's getting older and older. But I'm actually very glad that I date each book. So the first one, Hide in the Past, it says it's set in 2013, and that is the time period it was set. And I'm really glad I do that. Some other authors in the genre don't, but I'm really glad I have done that, because genealogy changes so fast, the records that we have available to us, and particularly obviously online, what records are there, and with things like DNA. So if I were to write present day, then somebody reading Hide in the Past would be like, why doesn't he just do a DNA test? You know, well, you couldn't do that in England in 2013. That's why. And I get very often people saying to me that they really like the fact that the book uses real genealogy and real records. And if he's looking at a census, if he's looking at a document, wherever that is in real life, that is how he has to access it as well. He hasn't got some special powers to look at things that the rest of us can't look at. And so when I'm doing the research for the books, I'll always do the things that he does. So if I have to go to a churchyard or a record office or whatever it is, I will do that work to make sure that's accurate. It changes so fast. So I'm very glad that I do date it. So someone reading a book in 2015, say, that says very clearly it's 2015, then they can see, oh, the record that now he would do something slightly differently, were it set in 2022. Back then, that record wasn't available. The census wasn't there or whatever it was. So that's kind of why that is. But if the series keeps going, then he's going to get older and older and older, obviously. So,
well, and the author has a responsibility to make it believable.
Mm.
You don't And you have to be, if you're writing about genealogical research techniques, I mean, obviously you have to be up to date on what's happening in the field, but, and definitely you are, but do you sometimes feel like you'd like to go back and rewrite those early books to reflect the changes in genealogical research?
Yeah, it does cross my mind, you know, that they would be very different books actually. But I definitely wouldn't do that. I've got too many ideas moving forwards. And I think in a way, it's quite nice to see that change of how things are different, because it's only really next year will be coming up to 10 years since the first one was published. And it's changed so much. Whereas I don't think if you wrote a police procedural book set in 2013, I don't think that much has changed that significantly. Whereas I think in genealogy, it's really very different. Lots of the things that Morton, he had to do what I did for my personal genealogical research back then. So if you wanted to look at a will, an English will, I had to go from Hastings, where I lived, to Brighton, the nearest city, to look. That was the closest place I could go to look at the wills. And so Morton had to do that in that book, whereas now, obviously, they're on Ancestry. I can do the same thing in 30 seconds sat at my desk, whereas back then, you have to leave your house and actually go to look through ledgers and actually microfiche, I think they were back then. So I think it's quite nice, actually, to see that change.
When you're writing, do you have, obviously, you have some sort of organizational technique that you use, because these books are complex. Because you are building a story within a story, and your main character, while you're the author and creator of him, you still need almost like a cheat sheet with you to say, oh, in this book, Morton did this, and in this book, he did that. And then, you know, I mean, it's a lot of books. It's 10 years of books. That's a lot to keep track of. And, you know, you have to build his character and build his world, which is pretty amazing. And in one of your videos on your website, you visit the house, the house with two doors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Morton's house.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
So you were wandering around. Yeah. You were wandering around Rye, and you were like, oh, this is it. This is the house I imagine Morton lived in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Rye is such a lovely town. It's very historic and it goes back a very long way. And there's a particular road called Mermaid Street, which is cobbled, and it's very old houses and lovely. And there's the Mermaid Pub that dates back to the 1300s, where the smugglers used to use it. So it's really full of history, and the houses have all very peculiar house names. And I thought, this has to be the place where he lives, in one of these quirky houses. And that one took me. The house with two front doors, it's called, because it's got two front doors. Yeah, but when I started writing the books, I had to kind of imagine what the interior was like. I didn't quite have the audacity to go up to the front door and say, do you mind me just having a little look around your house? So then when it came up on Airbnb, so I thought, I've got to stay there. But the interior was completely different to how I imagined, and therefore how I described in the book. Still very lovely and very historic, much bigger than I thought. And yeah, completely different layout. So I now have, when I'm writing, I have to try and remember my fictionalized version of it rather than the real version.
Some authors actually like sketch out a house, like have a paper with the sketch of what the character's house would look like and their life would look like. And the people and friends that they come in contact with. So as a genealogist and a historian, do you ever step away from the actual historical genealogical facts? Because you're writing fiction.
In the book, yeah. Mm. So it's, yeah, again, quite a tricky balance to strike, really. As I said, the methodology is always accurate. So the archives and like I said, I go to those places. So I describe them exactly how you get there and what if this document is on a computer or a feature or a ledger or how you order it. All of that is completely accurate. And what I generally do is have some real examples in there so that people kind of get a feel for what that would likely contain. But yes, I do then fictionalize the content to suit the story. But it's never anything that's out of the realms of what you would expect to find in that document. So I've had lots of people say, oh, I hadn't heard of that particular resource or that particular archive. I'll go and look for that because I've got issues. So I try to use real examples in there, but I do fictionalize it to fit the story. Yeah.
Well, it's very tricky what you're doing. Mm. You know, that the genealogical discovery and then hooking that back into the story. It's difficult to do. It's not as simple you have to come up with the whole story. You need to know the whole thing before you actually start writing. You can't just say, I'm going to do this piece and this piece and this piece. You need to actually know where you're going with this.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a lot to hold in my head.
It's a lot to hold in your head. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But then you have other series that you've written. You have, what's the other one?
Mrs. McDougall. I really like Mrs. McDougall. I need to get back to her because, I mean, I say it's a series, but so far I've only written one. And I keep being nagged regularly for people asking when I'm going to the next one. She's a distant relation of mine. So I think she's something like, it's either first cousin, six times removed, or it's something really distant. She lived in Settlescombe, which is a little village outside Hastings. And she had three sons, and two of the three died in the First World War. And I always felt really sorry for her. Obviously, I didn't ever know her or anything about her, really, other than what I could find in archived documents. But I kind of set to imagining what her life would have been like. And so I wrote this book, which is, it doesn't have that much genealogy in it. It's very much more historical fiction. And it's my imagination of her going back to Belgium and France to find out what happened to one of her sons, Malcolm McDougall. And again, I went out there and did all the research and went to the museums and the archives and went to the exact places where Malcolm was and where he died and everything. So again, trying to bring in as much fact and real, the dates and everything of where his regiment were, that's all real. But you know, I don't have any evidence at all that she actually made this trip and did these kind of things. But yeah, so that one's called Ghost Swifts, Blue Poppies and the Red Star. So that's, yeah, very much historical fiction set in, she lives in the village in Settlescombe, and then it's her journey. So there'll be future books where she helps other people try to find out what happened to their sons. That's the idea for the series anyway. But yeah, only one so far.
I'm sure you have a long list of things you'd like to write about.
Yes, huge.
Huge. How many books have you published so far?
So there's been 9 Mortons, plus a short story, plus Morton in Lockdown, which is an interactive web-based story. Yeah, the Mrs. McDougall story, 4 local histories, and then the investigative genetic genealogy book. That's a series. I've got one book out, Chester Creek Murders, and the second one will be out next month. So, yeah, so I don't know what that the tally is.
It's more than one a year.
Yeah, it does average, because some of them have been shorter, whereas the second to last Morton one, it was the longest I've ever written. It was The Sterling Affair, it was called, and about spying and spies, and that was 140,000 words. So that particular one took me 14 months from starting to publication, whereas some of the other ones are a bit shorter. And yeah, so yeah, I've got quite a few, but ideas for many more.
And I'm sure you have research files of material that you have these ideas. You're probably already filing away things to write some of those other books. I mean, you can't start from scratch all the time. Plus, plus the Morton books are within Morton's lifetime.
Yes. I've got so many ideas. I never ever finish a book and then think, right, what am I going to do next? I've got so many ideas, and I quite like that way of working, because so my next book I'm about to start writing will be Morton 10, and that will be probably in a couple of months I'll start writing that. But I've also got the idea for Morton 11, and I've been doing little bits of research for that, and that kind of just sits in the back of my brain, even though I might not be writing that for another year and a half, 2 years even, the basic idea sits there. And so if I come across anything in my own research, or just, you know, just that idea just sits there kind of, you know, brewing, and so it means it can be added to over that time. And so I'm constantly making notes on my phone or emailing myself, or I write in Scrivener, and so I've got files there set up for several books. And so once I've emailed myself or made a note or whatever, I then transfer them at my desk. I transfer it to the Scrivener file for that particular thing. I mean, some of it I don't end up using, but you know, generally those ideas sit there and until it's time to begin writing.
And do you have, I mean, usually writers have people who read their books just to, not just a proof, but sort of read through them and make sure everything makes sense. Because when you're deep into the writing, it's very easy for little inconsistencies to creep in. Do you have readers?
Yeah, so I go through the book several times myself. When once it's finished, I try if I can to leave a bit of a gap so I can just let it kind of sit to one side for a minute. Then I'll go through it several times. But you're right, it's very difficult to see the wood for the trees. I can read it five times and then somebody else will read it and say, there's a word missing there. My brain has just put it in. But yeah, so it goes to the editor once I'm kind of happy with the general structure of it and I feel it's coming together. Then I have it back and I make changes. And then it goes to early readers. So there's about 15 of them, various parts of the world and various experiences with proofreading, various experiences with genealogy. So they've all had some kind of genealogical background, not necessarily professional at all, but they certainly have an interest in it at least. And they'll come back and they'll say, if it's one that's set in America, they'll say Americans wouldn't say it like that. They might say that there's a better way of finding that particular record. So they kind of give me the whole spectrum there of editing. Then I put all those changes together and then it goes back again to the editor and then finally back to me for a final look and then it gets published.
What would you like to see happen with the Morton books?
Oh, that's a very tricky one to ask. I'd like to see him certainly keep going for a while. I've got several ideas there. I'm gradually bringing in more DNA and genetic genealogy as kind of, I think, you know, lots of genealogists are doing anyway. So I think that's kind of in tune with the world of genealogy. I guess just to keep on taking more cases, maybe do some international cases, because he obviously lives in Rye in Sussex, which is very close to the Kent border, which is where I now live. And so I'm a bit lazy, I guess. And so Morton does a lot of work in Kent and Sussex. And so people are forever saying, can you go somewhere else? Can you go up to Yorkshire or down to Cornwall? I get lots of requests for Australia. There's an obvious kind of convict storyline somewhere there, but it's certainly something I'm very interested in doing. It's just trying to find the time to make that work. So yeah, I think a few more international cases. There are going to be some links and tie-ins with the Venator cold case series, the one that's set in America. So yeah, I think just to keep going, carry on with his good work.
Are they available as audiobooks or are they strictly print books?
So all of the books are available paperback, Kindle, and various other ebook formats. And all of them, yeah, all are audiobook except for when a book comes out, it kind of takes a while for that to be then processed, but they all will eventually.
Well, Nathan Dylan Goodwin, I'm really enjoying The Foundlings. And guess I should start at the beginning of the series next time.
Yeah, I mean, you would be getting more of his growth and development as a person and his relationships, you know. Again, can't give too much away, but yeah, his personal relationships with his family members and his journey to finding out who he really is. So you've jumped in quite far in, but I don't think in The Foundling there's not too many spoilers in there. So yeah.
All right. I want to thank you so much for joining me on The Photo Detective. I will start the series over again since I'm a big believer in reading a detective series from the beginning. But kudos to you. It's a lot of work and you've done a really nice job.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media, leave me a rating and a review, and if you know of a friend or family member who's also interested in family photographs, share this episode with them too.
I'm thrilled to be offering something new, Photo Investigations. These collaborative one-on-one sessions look at your family photos. You and I meet to discuss your mystery images and find out how each clue and hint might contribute to your family history. And trust me, These images can reveal so much in your research. I have decades of experience in the photo, genealogy, and history industries. This is your chance to learn from me and discover the stories in your family images. You can find out more by going to MaureenTaylor.com and clicking on Family Photo Investigations.